Welcome to Day on Broadway for Friday, April 7th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am a black line.
Sorry, I edit that out, so when you're not here, I don't accidentally say it like Ron Burgundy, but you're always here.
And I am Broadway star's James Marino.
James, nice to have you back, buddy. You had an adventurous two nights at the theater.
I did, and I just, you know... Gratitude Friday? Is that such a thing?
It is now.
It is now. I saw Tennessee Williams' Glass Menagerie with Sally Field, and wow, I loved it. I have to go back and read the reviews that were not so favorable. I mean, what a show.
Well, they were better than we thought. We expected them to be a lot worse than they were, and they ended up actually being far more positive than you and I anticipated.
The reviews, you're saying, yeah. The reviews, yeah. And then I saw The Play That Goes Wrong last night. Wow! How much fun was that? Oh, my goodness. So much fun.
I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that.
It's going to be quite a horse race, and certainly... We're very fortunate right now to be experiencing this Broadway season. I hope that everybody gets a chance to see at least one of the shows that's on Broadway this year that is a new work. All right. Speaking of new works, let's talk about War Paint as the critics weigh in on the opening of War Paint and tell us what they had to say.
Well, as you said, the new musical War Paint, which had its out-of-town tryout in Chicago over the summer in 2016, officially opened at the Nederlander Theater last night. The show has a book by Doug Wright, music by Scott Frankel, and lyrics by Michael Corey. Those three are all the creators of the fantastic musical Great Gardens. That musical won a Tony Award for Miss Christine Ebersole, who co-stars in War Paint, alongside the indomitable Patti LuPone. They are joined in... If you were doing the hierarchy of how important actors are in a show, LuPone and Ebersole up top. And then about 20 slots down, apparently, are Tony nominees John Dossett and Douglas Sills. Those are two great names as it is. But this show is very much about Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole's characters, who are Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden, two huge cosmetic magnates who, and this is important to a lot of these reviews, absolutely hated each other, but... never actually met. They hated each other from about five blocks away where their salons were in New York City, but because they despised each other by reputation, refused to ever meet. So that plays a big part in a lot of these reviews, so keep that in mind. We're going to start off with Mr. Ben Brantley of the New York Times, who reviewed the Chicago run of The Goodman last summer. For this new review, he wrote, quote, Miss LuPone and Miss Ebersole, and he makes note that he keeps rotating those names, not to give one billing over the other, which is probably smart in the case of these two stars. LuPone and Ebersole are not coasting on the market value of their star appeal. They're strategically deploying the knowledge and craft of a combined eight decades in musicals to make us believe that the show in which they appear is moving forward instead of running in place in high heels. If that sounds like heavy lifting, Miss Ebersole and Miss LuPone, switched them there, seldom betray the strain. Even more than when I saw them in an early version of War Paint in Chicago last summer, they look as if they were having a marvelous time singing solo after solo about the specifics of the beauty business and the penalties of becoming a successful woman. After all, the creators of War Paint have lovingly custom-tailored roles for Miss LuPone and Miss Ebersole, switched again, in a show that assures them separate ovation-garnering entrances. So, though my eyes occasionally glazed seeing War Paint for the second time, I wouldn't have missed it if only to hear its leading ladies' climactic ballads. Miss LuPone has an ardently sung tribute to the preservative powers of narcissism, which is just funny, during which a gallery of Rubinstein's portraits by famous artists materializes behind her. And in the show's most exquisite number, Arden sings, takes inventory of an existence lived in a pale shade of rose. The song is called Pink, and as Miss Ebersole delivers that seemingly cheery word, it is weighted with triumph, regret, defiance, and anger, all struggling for ascendancy. It's a reminder of how a single ballad and a lone interpreter can capture the capture the full ambivalent spectrum of a lifetime. So, James, I feel like as is generally the case, this will be the review that everyone points to, but it is very emblematic of a lot of the other reviews. Raves for the two stars Lipponen ever saw, but for the show itself, kind of meh. We have a difference of opinion sometimes with the song. Some people loved them. Some people thought they were wishy-washy. Overall, the structure of the show, Brantley says, really leaves something to be desired. But we'll get that into that a little bit more in some of the other reviews. AM New York's Matt Winman gave the show 3 out of 4 stars, which is good, writing, quote, and I love this analogy here, imagine a sequel to Wicked where the two young witches of Oz have grown up to middle-aged businesswomen in early 20th century New York. That paints a picture. He continues, the musical is built around an unwieldy, repetitive ping-pong structure of shifting back and forth between the two characters. He goes on, however, War Paint still has a lot going for it, including self-empowered protagonists, high-powered performances, well-crafted period-style songs, the classy aura of old-school New York, and the smooth direction of Michael Greif. Pretty good. Marilyn Stasio of Variety wrote, quote, War Paint is a musical about Catherine Zuber's fabulous costumes and magnificent hats as modeled by the great Patti LuPone as Helena Rubinstein and Her Highness Christine Ebersole as Elizabeth Arden. And if those hallowed names mean nothing to you, this is not your show. Like, that is very evocative there. The Grey Gardens team is reunited and in good form here. The music feels right for both the individual characters and the progressive time frames. The lyrics suit the characters and serve the plot, and the book is smart and literate. Although opening the story in 1935 when both women had already achieved success deprives us of watching them struggle to rise above their backgrounds and overcome anti-Semitism in Rubinstein's case and upper-class social snobbery in Arden's. Now, those have been mostly positive, but as is becoming a tradition here this season in the reviews, Jeremy Gerard of Deadline begs to differ. He wrote, quote, somehow this all manages to be a huge bore, though not for want of trying an effortful lung power from the leads in director Michael Greif's high voltage production. The score by the talented duo of Scott Frankel and Michael Corey is as hard on the ear as the book by their Grey Gardens colleague Doug Wright is clunky and predictable. The big numbers seem equally apportioned between Lipponen and Ebersole, but none of the songs achieves a necessary emotional payoff, perhaps because the authors are so intent on not letting one overshadow the other, which is clearly evidenced in Brantley's swapping of the names. So, James, I think if you would have asked me what the reviews were going to be like this morning, this is pretty much it. You know, positive for the performances, hit or miss for the show, the book, and the score itself.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see this, and I do not know this information, and I should have asked you before we started recording. Do you know if Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden are still alive?
I don't believe so. I can do some quick Googling here. I believe they have both.
I wonder if they had any estate issues with throwing this show together, or...
I don't know. Helena Rubinstein died in 1965, so she's long gone. And Elizabeth Arden appears – oh, I'm just getting her company here. Come on. Oh, she died in 1966, so they were both long gone. But this was based on a novel – or not a novel, a book itself called The Powder and the Glory by Anne Carroll Grossman and Arnie Reisman. And then that was turned into a documentary by Lindy Woodhead. Obviously, Doug Wright likes adapting documentaries into musicals. So I would imagine that if they were optioning both the documentary and or the book, that everything would probably be clear through that.
So Marilyn Stasio at Variety says that if these names mean nothing to you, it's not your show. I wonder if I'm going to like it or not. But we'll talk about it on This Week on Broadway, I think.
Yeah, but at least Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole, those names mean something to you,
absolutely.
So you should be fine.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No.
There's four names.
All right. So let's move forward to MTC made an announcement for casting for this summer's Prince of Broadway.
Yeah, yesterday the Manhattan Theater Club announced nearly the entire cast for their upcoming Broadway debut of the Harold Prince Revue, Prince of Broadway. Co-directed by Prince and Susan Stroman, Stroh also will be doing the choreography. The show will feature Chuck Cooper, Janet Dekal, Nancy Opel, Brianna Marie Parham, Emily Skinner, Brandon Aronowitz, Kaylee Ann Voorhees, and Tony Yazbek, with one additional cast member to be announced later. I have a feeling they might be waiting to see what happens with Anastasia and whether or not they can get Ramin Karimloo back, who did the world premiere, which we'll talk about here in a second. But I think Anastasia is probably going to be around by the time this opens. Prince of Broadway's limited run will begin previews at MTC's Samuel J. Friedman Theater on Thursday, August 3rd, ahead of an August 24th opening night. The show, which had a star-studded world premiere in Japan last year, which Ramin Karimloo was a part of, looks at the incredible six-decade career of one of the most important figures in Broadway history. As a producer and director, Hal Prince has won a record 21 Tony Awards and has ushered such classics to the stage as West Side Story, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Fiddler on the Roof, Cabaret, Evita, Company, Follies, A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, The Phantom of the Opera, and more. James, Hal Prince's career is unparalleled in the musical theater, so you know the material is going to be good and strong and interesting, but this cast is dynamite as well. So I'm excited to see what comes of this, and I have a feeling this will be one here in a few years that many, many regional theaters will be doing as well.
It is quite the cast. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. I think that Jason Robert Brown worked on this for...
He did. I believe he did the orchestrations originally for it and for the Odd Couple. Now, you remember he has a long career with Hal's daughter, Daisy. And Jason Robert Brown, he is the music supervisor, arrangements, and orchestrator. And he's also written some new songs for it as well. So JRB is very much involved.
Yeah, I just didn't see his name in the press release. I wondered if he was still doing it, but it's exciting. I'm really excited for this. Yep. Next up, the Tony Awards Administration Committee makes the latest rounds of rulings.
Yeah, James, the Tony Awards Administration Committee met earlier this week and yesterday released their third set of rulings of the season. They will meet once more before the nominations are determined. And I do want to make sure that I differentiate between the Administration Committee and the Nominating Committee, because a lot of times those two groups get confused, but they are separate. And our friend Sam Gonzalez, who's a member of one of them, I can't remember which one, I think Nominating, he always sets me straight when we screw it up. So thanks for that. But the productions discussed for the committee's third meeting were August Wilson's Jitney, Sunset Boulevard, Significant Other, The Glass Menagerie, which you just mentioned, Come From Away, and Arthur Miller's The Price. The biggest ruling that they made, and there weren't a whole lot, was that Tony Shalhoub, Jessica Hecht, and Danny DeVito, though appearing above the title, will all be considered eligible in the best performance by an actor or actress in a featured role in a play. And unsurprisingly, Gideon Glick, for Significant Other, will be considered in the best lead actor in a play categories. All other eligibility rulings were consistent with opening night billing. That also means that according to Tony rules, Jitney will be eligible for the Best Revival of a Play Award since it has previously had a major New York production that was longer than 3 years ago. One thing to remember, though, is that following the Hedwig win for Best Revival of a Musical a few years ago, they changed the rules so that if a show's Broadway debut won in a revival category, the authors of the show would also receive a Tony. So August Wilson could posthumously win another Tony this June, which is always pretty cool. The committee's rulings also mean that all cast members in both Jitney and Come From Away will be considered in featured categories. And it's important, since Sunset Boulevard was part of these rulings, it bears repeating that Glenn Close will not be eligible for award consideration for the Tonys since she has previously won for the same role. But overall, James, pretty cut and dry here.
Yeah, and we're getting down to nuts and bolts here, so it must be that time of year, isn't it now?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's up in the show and casting news?
Well, yesterday, the MCC Theater announced its five-show 31st season, which adds a fifth production to the theater's usual four-show season and boasts a mix of world and New York premieres from acclaimed playwrights. First up, the New York premiere of Philip Dawkins' new play Charm, which will be directed by Will Davis, will begin previews on August 31st of this year. And then they will be followed up by the world premiere of Schoolgirls, or the African Mean Girls play by Jocelyn Bio. That first preview will begin on November 2nd. Then the world premiere of Relevance by J.C. Lee, directed by Liesl Tommy, will be the first show of 2018. It'll begin previews on February 1st. Then it'll be followed by the world premiere of Transfers by Lucy Thurber. That will play the spring. April 5th will be the first preview. And the season will be finished up with the world premiere of Reasons to be Pretty Happy by Neil LaBute, directed by Lee Silverman. The first preview of that will be August 16th of 2018. This has been a long relationship between Neil LaBute and MCC with Reasons to be Pretty, Reasons to be Happy, and then this one, Reasons to be Pretty Happy, had a star-studded reading. I think this was earlier this year, a few months ago. So this is the natural progression of that as well. So really good season over at MCC.
All right. And what's happening with San Francisco's SHN?
Well, yesterday, producers Paul Blake and Mike Bossner, in conjunction with San Francisco's SHN organization, announced the complete casting for the pre-Broadway world premiere engagement of Roman Holiday, the Cole Porter musical, that will play San Francisco this summer. In addition to the previously announced stars Stephanie Stiles, Drew Gehlig, Jared Spector, and Sarah Chase, the cast will also feature five-time Emmy nominee Georgia Engel from The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Everybody Loves Raymond, as well as Tony nominee Michael Mulholland, Heron, Kevin Duda, and Broadway Radio's own Andrew Kober, as well as others. We will have the complete cast announcement in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. Performances of Roman Holiday will begin next month on May 23rd and will run through June 18th ahead of an anticipated fall 2017 Broadway opening. And finally, in show and casting, James, yesterday, Pulitzer Prize and Tony-winning playwright Robert Shankman's Trump-era play Building the Wall announced its New York premiere. It is currently, that's a nice title, isn't it? It's currently on a rolling world premiere across the U.S., and the New York Times reported that Tamara Tooney and James Badge Dale will star in the New York production, directed by Ari Edelson and produced by Jeffrey Richards. The play's official description reads, "It's the very near future, and the Trump administration has carried out his campaign promise to round up and detain millions of immigrants. Now, a writer interviews the supervisor of a private prison as he awaits sentencing for carrying out the federal policy that has escalated into the unimaginable. This riveting, harrowing, and illuminating drama delivers a powerful warning and puts a human face on the inhumane, revealing how when personal accountability is denied, what seems inconceivable becomes inevitable." James, I spoke to Mr. Shankin last fall about a month and a half before the election, and even then, he had some pretty choice words about then-candidate Trump. So the fact that the man who wrote All the Way and a number of other plays based on American history has dived back in to the dramatic side of the political arena shouldn't be too shocking. So I'm interested to see how this one does in New York, especially with somebody as acclaimed as Jeffrey Richards producing.
Sure. I mean, and he, you know, this is what he, this is how he expresses himself. He's a writer. And, I mean, I can't wait to see this.
Building the wall kind of says it all.
I can't even imagine. I wonder if they'll, recreate that set from Falsettos where they had the cubes that rebuilt the set every time they did something different. It was really cool. And that was who did
it
the set?
Would be if you vamp a little bit more, David Rockwell.
Rockwell, that's right. All right. Oh, look at this. PBS confirms that Falsettos will air despite budget cuts.
Yeah, apparently recent Falsetto star Andrew Rannells made a little bit of a whoop-de-doo on Late Night with Seth Meyers on, I guess that would have been Wednesday night, when discussing the upcoming broadcast or whatever. He said, quote, "Now PBS is in some peril of losing a lot of funding. So we have this thing in the can and it will hopefully still air." Some people kind of got a little nervous about that, James, because we talked about when they filmed it, one of the last two performances they filmed. But later in the day, my Broadway World colleague Karen Robbins spoke with PBS and they gave her a statement saying that, quote, "Rannells' comments about the proposed budget cuts, which are indeed very serious, are right on target, as are his remarks about the positive and inspiring impact PBS generates from young viewers. But rest assured, the PBS broadcast of Falsettos coming up on the Live from Lincoln Center series will indeed air as planned, although they did not confirm a date. So if you watched Seth Meyers the other night and got worried that Falsettos might never come to the TV screen as you'd hoped, PBS officially says it will, so you can breathe a little easier.
Well, Randall's is not getting his tote bag for Christmas. That's it.
although it could have been one of those guerrilla marketing things that you love, like the cats protest or whatever, where he says, maybe this isn't going to happen. And then they get to put out another press release that said, this is still happening. Make sure you call your congressman to make sure we get funding. So who knows? It could be something really, really Machiavellian going on.
I think Patty Murin set this up.
I blame Patty for everything. I don't
blame know. Patty. Oh, that's a good name for a show. Blame Patty. I like that. Hey, that's what Mandy did during Evita. Mandy Patinkin discusses emotional visit to Sunday Revival.
Speaking of PBS, because I really kind of fell in love with Mandy Patinkin and Sunday in the Park with George through their broadcast of the original Broadway production of Sunday. But he was on Live with Kelly, and he was talking about he was actually there promoting Homeland, I believe. But they asked him about going to see the current Broadway revival of Sunday in the Park with George, and he just talks about sitting in the audience openly weeping, and it got to the point where he was crying so much that he was concerned that he was distracting other people from watching the show. So he was there with his wife, and they went backstage afterwards. And he said that it, just him and Jake Gyllenhaal and Annalee Ashford, when he went backstage, they just all embraced and kind of cried together for a few minutes. He said it went on for minutes. Anybody who has ever seen Mandy perform in concert knows that, or has kind of heard stories about how sometimes difficult he is to work with on television shows, knows that he is nothing if not passionate. And he talks with Kelly and about just how important the show was to his career. So I can only imagine what types of emotions he must have felt going and seeing this production. There was another revival, obviously, but hey, man, Jake Gyllenhaal's playing the role you created. So, that's definitely nice to see an A-list guy stepping into a role that you were so important in bringing to the stage. So I love Mandy. He is one of my favorites of all time. So this was really cool to see his reaction to the show.
I'm a huge fan of his, but can you imagine during the run of Evita, the stories that Hal Prince could tell us? You know, maybe in The Prince of Broadway, he sits down with a scotch and says, Mandy and Patty weren't having such a good day. Let me tell you what happened.
maybe they'll have a big Hirschfeld painting of Hal, and it'll talk during the show, kind of a la Sondheim on Sondheim. But I mean, you know, what's great about it, we're so off topic here, but what I think is so interesting is that Mandy and Patty have these reputations of being larger than life and being sometimes difficult to work with. Yet these two are the best of friends. I mean, so much so that it wasn't, 4 or 5 years ago that they did a concert run together on Broadway. I mean, where they did Evita stuff. So, I mean, it's interesting that these people who are known for being so intense that they can border on prickly love each other as much as they do and get along so much, which you don't often see a lot of alphas, you know, working well together like that, both personally and professionally. So it definitely, you know, I don't know what it says, but it says something about their personalities.
I think it's because they have so much talent and so much love.
Yeah.
And that's how it all works. All right. Why don't you get us out of here?
I was going to make a joke. I'm glad you saved me from that. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something That Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. By the time this interview or by the time this podcast comes out, my review of the new movie Speech and Debate will be up on Broadway World. So check that out. I really liked it. I had never seen the stage show, but I really liked the film.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for wrapping up the week with us. This Sunday, on This Week on Broadway, we've got a full slate now. Peter is back. Michael is back. Jenna's going to come in and talk with us also. And Tedra Milan from Present Laughter is also going to be with us. So check out that show on Sunday, and Matt and I will be back on Monday. I don't care what the bourgeoisie say. I'm not in business for them, but to give all my desk amisados a magical moment or two. There is me.